Say, Rolando.
What's up?
If you were to have an animal embody your spirit, your soul, do you know what animal you would want that to be?
A bear.
A bear?
A bear of some
What is
sorts.
It about a bear?
I don't know. They seem powerful, but powerful. Like also they get to sleep all winter. Mm. It's like the life, yeah. Right?
Okay. Mine would be an eagle.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I should have asked. What would yours be, Nicole? Why an eagle?
I love the idea of having something that can do things that I can't, you know, that can fly, that can soar, that can attack and just is strong.
Right. Which is why I want to be a bear, except yeah. I get to sleep all winter.
That's bonus points there.
That's the bonus points to being a bear.
Well, did you know that actually there is a world, a parallel world in which people do have animals that are part of their souls?
Or their souls. Is it?
I think it's just their
it's something
souls.
Like that. It's something like that. It's an extension. Thank you, Eddie Z.
And that world exists in Philip Pullman's Golden Compass trilogy, or is it called His Dark Materials? Who knows? It's called His Dark Materials, but some people get confused with the Golden Compass.
Because the Golden Compass is the first book, yeah.
That first. Well, technically, it's Northern Lights.
Northern Lights is the first? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. But we'll talk more about that when we get into this week's episode, the Golden Compass 2007 film, and the His Dark Materials HBO BBC co-production TV series.
Yes.
I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality. Well, welcome, guys. It's been a very warm January weekend this past weekend over here in the Northeast. We hope that everyone's weather is great where you are. This is great winter weather discussions because of the north and everything that comes with these books, but we're having unseasonable warmth here.
Yeah, HBO loves their north.
They do. You know, is that why they picked it?
I mean, they're looking for a replacement for Game of Thrones, right? So this has a lot of parallels.
It's fantasy. It's in the north.
Yeah, you know, there's cold.
There's polar bears instead of dragons. Mm-hmm. Bam. So we're talking about Golden Compass, His Dark Materials. Our producer, who's usually with us, Eddie Z, are you either, you've wanted to read these? Have you read these books?
I haven't read these books. I do want to read them, especially after watching the series.
So no one here has read these books?
No.
Oh, man, my roommate loves them. But...
Really?
Mm-hmm, big fan.
My father was a fan of the book series also. He listened to them on audiobook.
Oh, yeah, my mom loves to do that too. Yeah. Is this something that after watching these materials you guys would want to read?
No. Not me. I have no interest, to be honest.
No interest? Okay. Well, when I watched all the things that we're going to talk about, because obviously we're not going to talk about the book, but we'll give some basis for the book, I was immediately reminded of Harry Potter. But I realized that even though the books were released before the Harry Potter books, the Harry Potter movies came out first. So they kind of have the up-ins in pop culture in terms of these properties.
Part of the reason why His Dark Materials got turned into a movie series was actually because of the success of Harry Potter,
yes.
Lord of the Rings. Like, fantasy was kind of becoming a thing. Big thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were trying to capitalize on it, Hollywood. It was New Line Cinema, and there was one more. I think Warner Brothers?
It was... No, it's just New Line.
New Line Cinema?
It was distributed by New Line Cinema, and it was production company New Line Cinema, Ingenious Film Partners, and Scholastic Productions.
Scholastic Productions, okay.
Wow, yeah.
Miss Frizzle behind the wheel.
So the first book by Philip Pullman, a young adult fantasy novel, Northern Lights, but in America, it's called The Golden Compass.
Mm. Okay, I see.
So it's how Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Except there's a big divergence in names here.
Yes.
I guess Americans couldn't really... Wait, why couldn't Americans grasp the idea of Northern Lights? I guess Golden Compass sounds cooler.
I mean, maybe it just confused them with like what happens in Alaska. The Northern Lights or something. But then again, I don't know. That's a good... I don't know.
Unless it was like a popular American book that was at the time that had Northern Lights in it.
Yeah. It could be. Well, this is a trilogy of fantasy novels. From Northern Lights was in 1995, The Subtle Knife in 1997, and The Amber Spyglass in 2000.
Mm.
And it follows the coming of age of two children, but really the first main character is Lyra.
Bellaqua. Later called Lyra Silvertongue.
Okay, I'm not that far. So should we, do we want to talk about the overall premise before we jump into
the
movies?
We might as well talk about the overall premise because the movie and the TV show, for the most part, mm-hmm. are very similar, with the ending being the most divergent.
Okay, go for it.
Both. But so the story of Lyra follows Lyra, mm-hmm. Blaqua. She is an orphan who's living in Jordan University in this world that's controlled by this entity known as the Magisterium, who worship the Jordan College, who worship this entity known as the Authority, which is more or less in our world known as God. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, so that's your basic setup. She tries to follow Lord Asriel, who is her uncle, to the north as he's doing research, but he won't let her. He wants her to stay in the college where he feels she's protected. And eventually she will come to encounter Mrs. Coulter, who... I won't spoil this until we actually start talking about the properties, but Mrs. Coulter has this instant connection with Lyra, mm-hmm. and decides to bring her along to London. And eventually Lyra starts feeling like, okay, I'm clearly a prisoner and I want out. So she eventually escapes and falls into the hands of the Egyptians. And the Egyptians are seafaring people of this world. Uh-huh. They live on like houseboats and stuff.
Is there any way we can make this less complicated for people who have no idea?
This story is super complicated, which is crazy to think that they try to like condense this all into like a book. But basically the main plot of it is, so if the overall plot would be children are disappearing.
Mm-hmm. And in a parallel universe.
In the parallel universe, children are disappearing. And the reason is because the Magisterium is running these horrific experiments on their souls. Mm. And Lyra has a destiny to be the one to intervene and like kind of save all the worlds that are connected through this thing called dust.
Okay.
So there's
a lot of elements.
There are a lot of elements there.
Yeah. And you just have to process one by one and how they kind of all fit in the whole story.
Right.
And especially Lyra's journey.
Yes. It is a journey story. It's a coming of age story, mm-hmm. which everyone loves. With a bunch of fantastical elements in there.
And we forgot to mention demons. We started talking about them. But demons are a part of your soul or your soul, depending. I think the movie kind of implied they were more so your soul. But the TV show makes it clear that it's more like a piece of your soul, right? A literal part of your soul. Until you hit puberty, your demon can change shapes.
They appear as an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And they can just, they can... change from one animal to another, depending on the circumstances or what the demon wants.
Correct. And then demons have to be very close to their host because to be a part, to their companion, their host, but they have to be close to their companion because if they're not, the companion and the demon will feel like this instant pain the further mm-hmm. they are apart.
Yes.
So that's why there are mysteries around some of these characters, because as we will come to discover, some characters can be far apart from their mm-hmm. demons. Mm-hmm. And we also learned that witches have the ability. Oh, they're witches, by the way, guys. But the witches, for example, do not have to be near their demons.
Yes. Yes. So much. Okay.
There's a lot of fantastical elements in
lots
this
of fantastical.
Book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it is, which is what's really impressive about it, is that when you watch either property, you just realize how much more with every scene you're learning about the world. And it does, for me, it's like, wow, this would probably be a great book.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad I didn't read it first, but perfect timing in terms of he wrote it in 1995. You know, Harry Potter only came out like the next year or two, and we experienced, it should be okay actually with RX. And we actually experienced a big like revival of fantasy within movies, mainly in this country, mm-hmm. in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. This was right before the superhero age kind of dominated. We got like this big surge of fantasy movies. You know, we got Firefly, even other than like the obvious, like we said, Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, just all these types of movies were coming out.
And also adaptations of YA properties.
Yes.
It would be the other elements that happened during this time period, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Twilight and Hunger Games wouldn't be that far off.
Exactly. And the year 2007 is a perfect example of kind of like this age, but also just like also how, you know, we're at where we are now, which is not a lot of original ideas. So here's the top 10 of the year 2007. Number one was Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End.
Which, that's the last one of the trilogy, right?
I think so.
If I remember correctly, yeah.
Yeah, the last one. Yeah, because we did a different year and it was there. Number two was Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Number three was Spider-Man 3.
Ew.
Four, Shrek the Third. All right, a bunch of sequels so
far. Wait, which one the third?
Shrek the Third.
Shrek the Third, which was also whack.
It wasn't that good. I was disappointed. Number five, Transformers.
Okay, I actually like the first Transformers. I'm going to pretend I didn't.
Okay. Number six, Ratatouille.
Okay. Number seven, that's the first original idea we've had so far.
That is the first original animation film. Seven, I Am Legend.
Okay, that's based off of a book and technically its own remake.
Yes. Eight was a Simpsons movie. Good for them. They cracked the top eight.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Now listen to this. Nine, National Treasure, Book of Secrets.
Oh, that's a sequel.
That's a sequel, yeah. And 10 was 300.
Okay.
So a bunch of just like fantastic. This is when like people were not interested anymore in Gladiator or Roman or Greek times. And they were starting to get interested in more fantastical stuff. No superhero movies for the most part other than Spider-Man, which is nice. Next year, completely forget about it. What wasn't in the top 10 was The Golden Compass. The Golden Compass was directed by Chris Weitz, who before that he directed About a Boy. I know, a very simple movie with like Hugh Grant and
Nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay or Best Screenplay, one of those two.
And then after he made The Golden Compass, his follow-up film was Twilight New Moon,
adapted because it was a remake of a British movie.
The About a Boy?
About a Boy.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, was it a remake?
I'm pretty sure it's a remake.
Wow.
It's an American remake of a foreign film.
That's nice. And after that, he didn't really make much, unfortunately.
After The Golden Compass?
Twilight New Moon. I think like his...
Oh, he did Twilight New Moon.
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
And then he didn't
I don't know which one that one is, to be honest.
That's the second one.
Eddie's a year fan. Oh, it's the second one?
Yeah.
Okay.
And just because Twilight was everywhere. With Jacob.
Oh, the left triangle. Yeah. I see. Oh, she broke up with Edward? I didn't know they had broken up. Okay.
But so you could see the influences in the top 10 that they had in terms of what people were seeing in the theaters. People were seeing Harry Potter still. Other stuff. So I already forgot the top 10. So New Line Cinema said, we're going to adapt this really beloved trilogy into a trilogy of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Never happened because actually this is technically a flop of a movie.
It is a hard flop.
A hard flop, even though it kind of got everything. It kind of like broke even.
I think it performed very. It performed a lot better internationally than it did in America.
It did, yes. Yeah, so, and that's a shame because when this movie ends too, it just like totally set you up for a sequel. And I was kind of ready for it.
Were you?
I was.
Oh.
So right off the bat, did you like this movie? Did you see it when it came out?
I did not see this movie when it came out.
I didn't. You did. I did. Do you like it?
I wanted to really like it. I did, and I did know that a lot of elements were taken out to please situations of possibly being boycotted this movie.
Yeah.
So I felt like it went very vanilla.
Towards the end, yes.
Actually, we're going to listen in right now to some of these complaints the Christian League had.
Today, the Catholic League begins its 2-month campaign against the Golden Compass. This movie, which stars Nicole Kidman, will open on 7th. We want everyone to know exactly what is at the heart of our protest.
The Golden Compass stars Oscar winner Nicole Kidman. It's adapted from the first novel in a trilogy by Philip Pullman. He's an outspoken atheist. Critics say it's trying to promote atheism to kids. And
The Golden Compass is, in fact, a very, very clever way of getting children to perform satanic rituals of necromancing.
This is something new. They want to sell atheism to kids, and they're doing it in a backdoor kind of stealth fashion.
Are certainly building a step-by-step case against the church and against anyone who reads it. And
kids in schools. Now, even if you don't believe, let me just finish here, Annie Laurie. Even if you don't believe that my belief is based on truth, that isn't God, we know that, at least in my personal life and in billions of other people's lives, religion has been a source of peace, of serenity, of happiness. And I don't understand why militant atheists wish to take that away from kids.
Yeah, the Christians were very up in arms against this movie because apparently this book goes very, very... It's very critical, first of all, of organized religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also... It starts teetering into anti-God, period.
Yeah.
Because of Lord Asriel's actions, which we actually do not get to see in the actual movie. Mm-hmm. But no, I did not get to see this movie when it came out. My father did, and he wanted me to go see it with him, and I did not want to go see it with him because it looked like a kid's movie. Mm. Like, I remember the commercials for it made it seem very childish, and I was just like, I don't really want to see this.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was like very heathen, heavy demon.
Yeah, it was heavy on all the demons. Animals, and yeah. I just felt like I'm just like, this looks silly. I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah, the marketing for this film, I don't know what it was, but it didn't scream to me either. Like, uh-huh. This wasn't a movie that I wanted to go see.
Interesting.
So I didn't see this movie until like 2 days ago.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought you had seen it. Like, yeah. Like, no, yeah.
Well, what did you watch first? This or the HBO show?
HBO show.
Okay.
I tend to do everything backwards.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. No, and actually, though, the reason I watched the H again, Eve. So the trailer, when the trailer, we covered it a little bit on the podcast when the trailer came out. It looked already much more interesting tonally than what I was given with the original trailer for the movie, and as a result I kind of wanted to watch that first and then kind of see compared to the movie after the fact, because you know.
Yeah, and it's really unfair that a book that was first turned into a movie and then a TV show. I mean, TV shows have more time to expand. TV shows have more time to do character building.
Yes,
whereas in a movie you only have 2 hours. So if, right off the bat, like, a TV show has the upper hand,
you would but
some movies do a good job. Uh-huh. This one does an okay job. I'm going to say that this movie is okay. It kept me entertained. Oh, I was okay. Somewhat invested. I'm a sucker, though, for this is like my kind of fantasy thing.
You animals? Know, talking animals?
It was kind of like, I mean, this movie reminded me a lot about Harry Potter.
Okay.
This movie, like, especially when we first meet Nicole Kidman, I'm like, are they at Hogwarts? Like, I just got that kind of like vibe from it. And Jordan, then once witches came in too.
Yeah, Jordan College is more or less Hogwarts like.
Yeah, you know? So there's just
except
like,
they're not doing anything magical. They're literally just being scholarly.
But also, I'm also like, oh yeah, take stabs at religion. Like, that's a great commentary to have. Like, you know, be mindful of who you trust and whatever authority there is. I'm like, I'm for that.
But did you see that much in the movie?
A little bit. I mean, I picked up on like the outfits of the people who worked for the Magisterium. Like, they look like popes.
Yes, they were very much like, yeah, priest garbs and stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it was like, that's a stab right there, you know. And also just like not trusting people of power, not trusting people who like speak for things.
Mm-hmm.
But so really quick, according to Wikipedia, this is what the movie's about. So, you know, our listeners who aren't familiar or whatever, they, you get a better sense of it. The film depicts the adventures of Lyra Bellacqua, an orphan living in a parallel universe, which also didn't get from the movie.
They only tell you in the exposition in the very beginning.
Yeah.
I guess I could throw it in there, but like, it's not a big deal in the movie.
No, it's not. Living in a parallel universe where a dogmatic ruling power called the Magisterium opposes free inquiry. Now, children in that universe are being kidnapped by an unknown group called the Gobblers, who are supported by the Magisterium, we find out. Lyra joins a tribe of seafarers, like Rolando said, the Egyptians, on a far trip to the north, the land of armored bears, in search of the missing children. So that's essentially what this movie's about.
Yes, it's a search for these missing children because one of the missing children is Lyra's best friend, Roger.
Yes, who she knew at Jordan College because she's an orphan. She was abandoned in her youth.
Yes.
So the movie kind of like sets you up in terms of what this world is about. How did you feel about that? Because I actually thought that the film did in comparison to the two, a better job of just throwing me into this world. It had visuals and narration.
Okay, so I'm not a fan of narrations. Oh, so as far as I'm concerned, right, the TV show is more like if I had read the book, basically. And I watched the movie afterwards. I'm just like, nope, this is missing something.
That's not fair, though, because they do
no, you're right, you're right. But like, and I'm obviously not making that. If I'm comparing the movie, though, the first 5 minutes of the exposition for me didn't really work well in terms of like, it kind of set up the rules of the world without setting me up for the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It just tells me, like, I know enough, I guess, to get by. And if the movie was good enough, I would be able to kind of learn more as I go along. But the movie doesn't really do a good job of kind of, like, building upon that world other than just showing it.
True.
And literally just not even sometimes even showing it, just telling you.
Well, the movie gives you the information that you need to know for the movie. It doesn't really harp on the fact that there's parallel universes and all this stuff. It just tells you a lot about the Magisterium, the world and how it works, the different groups, because we're going to meet a bunch of the different groups, and about this thing called the Golden Compass.
Yeah, and it's just, so I guess my beef is just like, I think that exposition, you necessarily didn't need it because you could have used that little bit of the minutes to like kind of fill in that as you're learning about as you go along, when we see the Egyptians for the first time, like we guess we have an idea because the exposition was there.
Yeah.
But like it probably would have been a little more organic to have it in the actual in the plot line, you know?
Okay.
Is what I guess this is where I'm getting a little frustrated. It's just like the movie was 2 hours, which is a long enough time for a movie. Yeah. But like if you're trying to just cram in too much, it's just like, all right, be selective of what you're cramming in and sure. where.
Show this instead of some other scenes. And there were a bunch of scenes in this film that I actually don't think the film even needed.
Mm-hmm.
But immediately after that, we're introduced with Lyra. And this Lyra is very like leader of the pack.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of bratty. But she's got a head, heart. She's got a good head on her shoulder. I find her more bratty in certain different interactions, especially when she meets a woman named Mrs. Coulter. We don't really get a sense of her relationship with the college or if she has any sort of paternal mother figure in her life. Mm-hmm. But we do get a sense of her loyalty to her friends.
Yes.
Which is really important for, I think, this whole movie. She's kind of like... her loyalty to her friends and like caring about her friends is, I think, of the utmost importance in this movie.
Yes.
So we come to learn she's an orphan. She does have an uncle, Lord Asriel, Daniel Craig. And he says that he's been on a mission in the north and he found this particle named dust. Mm-hmm. The Jordan College is like, this is heresy. You know, this is bad. This is like blasphemy almost. And he's almost poisoned, but Lyra, who is secretly hiding, witnesses him about to drink a thing. So it's just like, so all this stuff and like all this antagonism gets
They quickly early on set you up to know that the Magisterium is a bad guy. I just feel like it just didn't, like, it felt like there was no motivation in kind of killing him is what it was. Like,
things just kind of happen.
This is the problem with this movie. Like, things just happen. And they don't give you either explanation or rationale to why these things are happening.
Also, there's not enough conflict in this movie. Like, when we meet Lord Asriel, you know, we don't really get a sense of the fact that, like, he's in trouble for his findings. He's in trouble for his work.
Mm-hmm.
Like he kind of comes, he tells everybody and like, I'm off to do my mission. And it doesn't really seem like he's like, oh my God, I feel like people are going to kill me for what I'm about to do. So let me get out of here. You don't get a sense of that.
It's quite adamant. It's just like, this is the right thing to do. And just goes along his merry way.
He does. But
was this before he was James Bond or after?
This is directly after Casino Royale.
Okay. This is directly after. Okay.
So, but I even though he's in like 10 minutes of the movie,
less
than that. I thought he was he felt like Uncle Asriel. Okay. Hey, Uncle Az, how you doing? You know, like he was nicer to Lyra.
He was.
Which also, Lyra, played by Dakota Blue Richards, what did we think about Lyra?
She's fine.
I like her.
I
think she's a good actress. She was able to hold it up.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so I actually... I was doing comparisons, but it's a rough comparison because I'm going to be right off the bat. This girl, the new Lyra. I mean, we already know that she has like these acting chops that we've seen in Logan. Yes.
And we know that her character is better developed. So that's against her.
But I think it's just the way you direct her, I suppose. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the directions that she got, I think she was a little bit too, they focused too much on her kind of free spiritedness and kind of. I think that's where you get kind of that sense of her being bratty, that kind of free spiritedness. Where I feel like Lyra, intentionally how they're trying to write her or at least how they're supposed to portray her was supposed to be more like headstrong and kind of like a bravery, like a bravery in there that's not really normal that you would see in children, right? Like that's how they're supposed to build her up. I feel like Lyra, right? Because these adventures that she goes on is. An act of courage that she has to take on. And like here, like everything she does, I feel like the actress is just going through these motions. And I'm not blaming the actress per se. Yeah. Yeah. I'm blaming the script. I'm sorry. The script and possibly the direction.
The movie definitely does. Like, it's just like, all right, and on to the next one, on to the next one. And I do think that especially when like Mrs. Coulter comes into play, there's just not enough conflict happening. But I still think regardless, her acting shines through.
Mm.
And like for, you know, a relative quote unquote nobody, that is leading this film. She does a great job of doing that.
She does a good job of interacting with the CGI.
She does a good job with that.
Which I've mentioned before. I think like younger actors and actresses always tend to do better pretending with CGI than adults.
I think so too.
Yeah.
And her demon is Pan.
Pantaleimon.
Pantaleimon.
Pantaleimon? Something like that.
Yes. And I love it. I love how like that every 2 seconds he's just changing form and yeah, all this
it's,
stuff.
It's very cute.
And but the bond was, I thought, really strong there. I was able to relate to that.
Yes.
And have a relationship
I could
with that.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So anyway, so Lord Asriel goes about his business and then enters a woman named Mrs. Coulter, who's played by Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, what did you think of her performance?
What an entrance too. We see her from behind and all this stuff. Well, it was really nice to see Nicole Kidman pre all of that work on her face.
Is that no?
I mean, this is when she was starting. Like, yeah, her lips are changing and all this stuff. But like, and this is also like when Nicole Kidman was in the height. Like, this she's starting to not be as strong as she was in her Moulin Rouge point. Nicole Kidman
she was like the hottest actress in the world. Yeah.
Yes. So she's starting to less be that. So this Mrs. Coulter is very pretty, very into fashion, very into, you know, we are polite. We are pretty. We do as we are told.
We actually, she specifically has said it. Just like, I do as I please.
Yes.
That's literally what she said.
So she's very like upper class, very refined, and just likes things the way she likes them.
And in a world dominated by men, she seems to be usually the only female.
Yes. And a very powerful one at that.
Right.
And she meets and hits it off with Lyra, and she's like, hey, Lyra, let's leave Jordan College and be my assistant. So that's when Lyra goes off.
Which I feel like came out of nowhere, right? Like, they meet, they're talking, and she's just like, I like you. You're going to be my assistant, and I'm going to take you away from this college.
It does.
And then, like, the headmaster says nothing.
Yeah, well,
I mean, he gives her the fucking alethiometer. It's just like, all right, like, come on.
Yeah, the movie does a good job in letting you know she can't be trusted. So it's just like the way they all respond to Mrs. Coulter when she comes, it's like, oh shit, this bitch.
I mean, subtlety was not a thing practiced in this movie.
So she goes off.
And her demon is a golden monkey.
Goes off in a blimp, which is my favorite thing, is that they travel by airship.
I do love the airships.
The airships are great and really cute looking. They go to London because London exists in this parallel universe from ours. And everything's going great until one day, Mrs. Coulter does not want her to wear a handbag inside. And this is a really important scene in terms of building the fact that Mrs. Coulter is the enemy, essentially.
Yeah.
And she's like, take it off. And Lyra is like, no, I don't want to.
Yeah.
And she's like, you will take it off. And she's like, no, I'm not. And then her demon beats the shit out of her other demon, which for me was hard too, because I just don't like seeing animal cruelty, even if it's CGI. I don't like seeing that shit.
No, I get you. Despite the fact that it happens in the wild in real life. But
yes. Well, that's why I can't watch things like Planet Earth. And when your demon is physically harmed that way, you are hurt by it.
Yeah, this is where we start learning again some more rules of the demons that have only been hinted at, but now we actually get to physically see it, which I think is cool, right?
Yes.
I think... So go on. What did you think of this scene? Because this is a good scene.
Yes. So we get violence to children.
Which is always fun.
Always always great. Animal violence. And it just... I like villains like this, where, you know, it's like... She looks like a normal person. You know, she acts like a normal person. But, like, if you just don't do what she does... And it's, like, it's as simple as, well, I like things the way I want it, and you're going to do as you're told.
Don't. Please, it hurts.
Lyra! Lyra!
Do as I tell you.
I promise.
Lyra. Thank you. And while you're at it, you must learn to control your demon. He's much too wild. Now.
But does she act like a normal person? Because, and I don't, no disrespect to Nicole Kidman, but like, I feel like a lot of the role, every time I see her like on screen, I get like nothing but coldness from her.
Well, but that's a good thing because she's the enemy here. She's the antagonist.
She is, but like, I feel like that coldness that I got there, in that scene it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking in the previous scene though, where like they're interacting for the first time.
Yeah.
Like even then I was feeling the coldness from her. And her interactions with the girl who's playing Lyra, Dakota.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't getting I was getting all the warmth from Lyra, getting nothing from Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I was happy that she just came out with her true colors.
Mm. Okay.
You're a cold-hearted bitch.
Yeah, yeah, she is.
I think in any form, it's an effective scene because it's just like, it's so fucked up. You know, like, okay, your demons aren't supposed to do that, one. And then two, like, you're hurting a child that you're supposed to love and help because they're just simply disobeying you. Like, that's bad. And then we later find out, because children have been gobbled up by things called gobblers, and nobody knows what happens to them. Nobody knows where they go. The Egyptians are on their own journey to find these people, the gobblers. Mm-hmm. Lyra finds out that this woman that is taking care of her, Mrs. Coulter, is in charge of the gobblers.
Yes, the General Ablation Board.
And that is why she leaves her. And when she does, she just leaves her. It's just like, all right, we got out. Thank God. Almost got kidnapped by gobblers and then rescued by the Egyptians. Like, bam, bam, bam. It's just like, that's all over within 2 minutes.
Yeah, this is like the first 30 minutes of the film, by the way.
So it's like so much. It's just like one adventure to the next without really like feeling any anxiety about it. And like, I hate when that happens, but that's a good thing. When you watch a movie, you want to have anxiety for your characters because that means that you're, you know, you're relating, and that's, it's drama well done, you know? And I didn't feel any of that. I was like, all right, well, now that's over.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say that you were feeling here.
No, like, I did not feel that. This is just like... She meets the Egyptians, and...
And then from the Egyptians, they decide to go north to Tromsville, because...
But, okay, so she was already given her golden compass, and this was a scene where I was just like, okay, this is a problem with either the movie or whatever, but they're like... Is there anything you want to tell us, Lyra? And she's like, yeah, I have this golden compass here. It's like, why are you doing that?
I know, and especially after Pan literally told you, it's like, you can't.
Yeah. And after this, like, whole thing with Mrs. Coulter, you just trust these people? Yeah,
that's true.
That was like, okay, probably should hide that to yourself, but whatever.
No, yeah.
So yeah, they go to the north. She meets a bear. It's a lot.
She meets the bear. She also meets Lee
Scoresby.
Lee Scoresby, who's played by...
Sam Elliott.
Thank you. I always forget his name, but I know... Now I will always know him as Bradley Cooper's brother in A Star Is Born.
That's he's a Texan aeronaut, and he's actually the only person who Philip Pullman said got his character just right.
I agree. I actually did like his character. I thought it was like, it's like a cowboy.
Yes, he feels like a true cowboy
who flies like air balloons. It's just like, how fabulous is this?
Well, Sam Elliott was in Tombstone, and ever since then I'm just like, he can't be anything but a cowboy for me. Like, ultimate cowboy.
But yes, she also does befriend a bear who was a prince who was at loss of battle or something to his brother, and now he wants to reclaim his throne, and for some reason he decides, like, you know what, Lyra, thank you for telling me where my armor is. His armor was missing, by the way,
because his armor was his demon. He said that. He's like a...
Like his demon. It's not his demon.
Yeah,
but
it's like his demon. Like, think about
the
how
bears
important
don't get
it is
demons.
To me. That's part of their soul, their identity, and all that stuff. So
anyway, we're really getting caught in the weeds here of this, like, plot.
Yeah.
There's also witches. They will show up. Who know Lee very well, apparently. And eventually... she ends up using the golden compass to find one of the boys who's been missing, who is a son of one of the Egyptians. His name is Billy. Billy Costa. Thank you. Yes, Billy Costa. She finds him in the town. After she brings him, like, she's immediately kidnapped by the gobblers.
Yeah.
And that's where she finds out what
the operation's going on.
No, she ends up first with the bears, right?
Yeah.
Which sets you up for this big, epic bear fight, by the way. That was pretty brutal.
Yeah,
I will say this about this scene, like, this scene was so brutal. Like, this, there was, do you guys remember where, like, the bear smacks
his
jaw off, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ, like, this is a kid's movie.
I remember being in the movie theater and everybody going
yeah,
when they saw that, just like the jaw just like it skid across the floor.
This actually might be the only moment of the movie that I actually liked, where I was just like kind of taken aback and kind of felt like, oh shit, like there's actual consequences in this world for like when stuff happens. Because up until this point, like, no one's died. You don't see any imminent danger. You don't see anything happening, right? And this is the first time we actually see a character die, and die so visually, right? So after York becomes the king of the bears again, and he decides to continue helping Lyra, so he ends up taking her to the place where they're doing these evil experiments on children.
Yes.
And when you go inside, it's like the happiest place on earth because the children are so happy, though. Like, they're like oblivious of what's happening, right? Which it's like a stark distinction from like the next property that we'll watch.
Yes.
But like, the kids are generally like, they're just like, no big deal. They're just here in the cold.
Yeah.
and she will eventually lead to an uprising. This is it. I'm summarizing. Leads the uprising. The witches come and they also help murder people.
Well, what they're doing there too is that there's a machine that can separate a child from their demon.
Oh yeah, that's another good scene in this movie, actually.
Yes, which that is, was an effective scene.
Yeah, where like they're separate, right? And you're just like, again, children screaming and like the demon next to him like kind of saying, just like, I don't want to go, right?
Yeah, and then and slowly dying.
We finally see Nicole Kidman do some acting.
Yes, and she's like, oh my god, Lyra. So then she rescues Lyra from this chamber that separates children from their demon, and that is what the gobblers are doing. This is also what the character of Miss Coulter runs. Mm-hmm. And so after this scene, Mrs. Coulter tells Lyra, the reason why I saved you and all of this happened is because I'm your mother. Spoiler! I'm your mother, and Lord Asriel's your dad. Mm-hmm. Surprise! When I watched this movie, I was like, she's lying.
Oh, interesting that you think that. Okay.
I was just like, because it came out so easy from her, like her revealing all this. Like...
And then the next thing, she's like, so are you going to give Mummy the golden compass now?
Uh-huh. Yes.
I was like, she's lying. No! And yeah, and I was like, good for her. Now, don't trust her. Give her the other thing. But like, I thought, to me, I was like, I don't believe it. And it wasn't until later on that I find out that she was indeed not lying. But okay. It was interesting because in the film, I was just like, manipulative bitch, this is the ultimate evil. How could dare you convince this child that you are their mother just to get what you want?
I agree with you. Had I seen this first, I probably would have been the same boat of just like, she's clearly lying. Why would we believe her?
Seriously.
Crocodile tears.
But then I guess, you know, even though she like pretty much was like, all right, well, I'm going to hurt you. Peace out. I'm leaving. Thanks, Mom. She believed that Lord Asriel was her father. She's mm-hmm. like, I'm going to go find my father. And that's how the movie ends. It's like, we're on a quest to find my father.
Yeah. And what's like a journey? There's like a big epic battle that does happen between the Egyptians and the people who run this concentration camp, basically.
It's essentially, yeah.
And the witches come and save the day.
Mm-hmm. But it's weird because even though all this stuff is happening, you leave the movie. I at least leave the movie. Well, why do they wish to do this to the children? You know, maybe that's something that they were planning on revealing in other films.
Do we know that in this movie? Why
Nicole Kidman in her bad person speech does like kind of reveal a little bit of her plan.
Yeah, but so, she's also like, it's we're trying to save them is what she convinces Lyra.
Right. So her basic thought is just like in this world, as she explains, dust is a connection to the original sin. And then like after you hit puberty is when dust settles in on humans, right?
Yes.
So they believe if they can get rid of your demons, which are created by dust or something,
mm-hmm.
you will no longer have this original sin. And this is the beliefs of the Magisterium. And therefore, this is why they're after trying to figure out a way to cleanse the universe.
Yes. But as Lord Asriel finds out that they're being lied to, and this dust can not only like give you enlightenment apparently, but it can lead you to other worlds.
Yes, Lord Asriel does say that is what he discovered.
So, but again, because it's just kind of like mentioned and then all this other stuff happens, this movie is more focused on the fact that Lyra wants to save Roger and this other character named Billy from the gobblers.
Uh-huh.
And this movie becomes a rescue mission.
Yes.
And yeah,
and sets you up that the next mission is to take the golden compass to her father.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that like no one at any point told her, is just like, you must get this to your father. That's never mentioned. Anymore.
Never mentioned.
It's just an assumption she makes.
Yeah. So it's kind of uneven. But I also like I don't know. I was like on board. I was like, okay, I'll give the second one a shot.
Oh,
and the second one never happened.
No, it did not.
But it's interesting too, because this film received such criticism from religious organizations that the studio ordered significant changes in late post-production.
Uh-huh.
And Chris Weitz later said that it was one of the worst experiences he's ever had on any of his films.
I mean, to my understanding, they also had filmed parts of the ending
mm-hmm.
that is from the book that kind of revealed Lord Asriel's true intentions.
Mm.
And again, that his story goes very anti-God. Basically, right?
Yeah.
So the studio itself was trying to figure out, just like, we cannot show this.
Yeah.
And they were trying to figure out, I guess, for the sequel to like kind of how to like kind of smooth that out a little to be like less anti-God. It's not even, I wouldn't even say it's like anti-Catholic. It's definitely a heavy anti-Catholic movie, but it's a critique of any organized religion.
It is. But so this film definitely like went through heavy edits. And when it came out, it did not, it was critically mixed reception, mm-hmm. and the revenue was way lower than they anticipated. So a sequel never happened.
Right.
And it was interesting because these movies also came out. Another one that was coming out during this time was they finally adapted the Chronicles of Narnia series. So I remember when it came out, I like convinced, I was like, Daniel Craig, yeah, he's Prince Caspian. Like, I remember getting very confused. Like, it almost, it branded itself so similarly to its competition, Harry Potter, Chronicles of Narnia, that like in my head, I got it all very confused.
Actually, I do remember part of the marketing. I do remember feeling like if you put those two trailers and to strip out the names, you probably would not be able to tell which one's a part.
Yes.
Because, you know, the, what's it called? Chronicles of Narnia has a Snow Queen.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Right? And it'll take place in the wintry wonderlands and stuff. So I literally, there were points in time where, like, I did confuse Nicole Kidman's character for the Snow Queen, Tilda Swinton.
Yeah. Yes, yes. That was...
Because they both wear these fabulous fashions. They're just absolutely fabulous and glittery, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So this film kind of just like, you know, fans of the Philip Pullman novel were just like, well, the Golden Compass was made, however they felt about it, and then that was it. But now BBC and HBO are already debuted in December, right?
Yes.
His Dark Materials.
Eight episodes.
Eight episodes, uh-huh. Season one of His Dark Materials.
There was only one writer.
Jack Thorne.
He was the only writer for most of the show.
Which is absolutely insane.
I actually do like it when there's only one writer has a voice for one show.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
It's rare.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Charlie Booker comes to mind from Black Mirror, but that's an anthology.
Well, Jack Thorne also wrote the play Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, I think.
Oh, really?
From J.K. Rowling's story. Mm. And he's written on other BBC productions, but I think this is like one that he's helmed. And yeah, that I think works in benefit for the show. It's produced by Bad Wolf and New Line Productions, so New Line must own this property, the rights to it.
New Line Cinema?
New Line Productions.
Oh, didn't they? New Line Cinema went under, basically. And
I think so.
They do blame the Golden Compass for it.
That's so crazy. Well, you know, think now in the age of television renaissance, they realize that the best way to tell the story and the way that people will actually watch and appreciate is on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So, we already went through the whole plot, but this television series, I mean, it digs way deep into it and even adds other things that the movie did not do, mainly parallel universes. The opening, first of all, it does this whole, like, now HBO is just obsessed with making like these whole intense openings for their TV.
HBO and BBC.
And BBC, yes, I'm sorry. Game of Thrones, Westworld, this like follows that whole epic opening. It's got this big score.
I mean, I don't know. They've always had like good openings. Oz. Well,
I mean, yeah, but like compared to like how The Sopranos,
I even like The Sopranos opening.
They were good, but
Sex and the City.
They're not similar. They're not like this whole like go through. You're focusing on the wrong things here. Okay.
Oh, actually, I actually do very much like the song from the His Dark Materials.
Yeah, I was singing it yesterday. Well, I had my girlfriend sing Game of Thrones, and then I sang His Dark Materials, and I was like, you see, it's the same. It's practically
they're very
in the same
similar.
Range.
I could see.
Yeah. So yeah, HBO, but that's just their thing now. You know, we're gonna do like this whole like in depth thing. Brilliant. When I first saw it, I was like, wow, that was excellent. So I applauded it.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, if you've seen The Golden Compass, it's a very easy guide between how His Dark Materials goes because it follows everything. The first 22 minutes of The Golden Compass is the pilot of His Dark Materials.
Yes.
Then the next 20 minutes is the second episode. So, of course, though, these episodes are hour-long.
Actually, I would say it's like the first 15 minutes are Golden Compass, the first episode, the second 15 minutes, which is up until The Runaway. Mm-hmm. Is the second episode, and then like your next act is how she comes into the hands of the Egyptians.
Yes,
there's a couple filler episodes, and then they flip around also the war between the polar bears and the
I'm not there yet.
Blaz Goblin. Yeah.
Yes, I did not finish the series.
So
Rolando has,
and I'm going to give full spoiler warnings because I don't think you can talk about the show without actually talking about the ending.
So, playing Lyra Bellacqua in this movie is Daphne Keene,
who. Is, do we know where she's from? Who wants to say? No?
You could say.
Eddie, I'll let you say it because.
Logan.
Yes, she plays X-23.
X-23, yeah.
X-23,
which happens to be the daughter of
Wolverine.
Oh.
And she was basically, she co-starred alongside this guy, Hugh Jackman,
uh-huh.
in the Logan movie. But my God, was she so good in this movie? Because she was for the most part, nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all her acting relied on facial expressions and, like, literal just grunts and screams.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
She's so good. And seeing her in a different role that has much more vocabulary and like vocal, like she shines in this show for sure.
Okay.
I think
she's very good. We get a completely different sense of who Lyra is from movie to show.
Yes.
And this one, you know, Lyra, a free spirit, a little stubborn, you know, definitely a chip on her shoulder about kind of not knowing anything about her parents, her uncle being stuck in a college, you know, all this stuff. But Lord Asriel, we find, brought her to Jordan College to mm-hmm. give her sanctuary, scholastic sanctuary, during a great flood.
Yes.
And he left. And then we jump to her at 13. And the whole meeting of Lord Asriel with the scholars at Jordan College occurs.
And here we see the scholars are much more afraid of like what he's bringing to the pack, to the point where like the mm-hmm. scholars are trying to poison him in order to like protect themselves from the magisterium.
Yes. And also there's black people.
Oh my God. So many black people in this yes, show. Like so many people of color in this show.
The thing about the Golden Compass is that like there was not any one person of color in sight.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. That's just, you know.
You don't think anything of it.
I mean, not until you watch it now.
Well, most certainly.
I watched the pilot of His Dark Materials first, and then I went back and watched The Golden Compass, and I was like, so wait, who is this? Who is this? And I got confused because they all looked alike. But there's also a couple of characters in the show that are not in The Golden Compass.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they actually took, because they have the intention of making all three books into this television series, there's characters from other books that are appearing in this, because that's what I think. There's like this one guy that I'm like, who the hell are you?
The bad guy?
And what are you doing? Is he the bad guy?
Are we talking about
the parallel universe jumper?
Lord Boreal? Boreal?
Yeah.
The one who I thought looked like Wyclef Jean.
You're so racist.
How is that? I was actually confused.
I'm joking.
Wyclef Jean, and there was another. He looked like a musician. But
Will I Am?
Maybe Will I Am. Mm. With like suits. But yeah, he is the bad guy.
Okay. He's the bad guy?
Well, is it confirmed? Definitely a bad guy.
He's a bad guy, and he's working with the Magisterium.
He works for the Magisterium. He has his own motivations, though.
There seems to be.
I'm going to say this. He has his own agenda. I would say
he does have his own agenda.
What's it called? This introduction of these characters and stuff is probably the weakest part of the whole show, to be honest, because it does feel a little shoehorned in, despite the fact that I'm assuming it will play a bigger role.
Well, doing my research, and I read about the books, there's a character that becomes a co-main character named Will Perry.
Who we are introduced to, I think, like episode 2 or 3.
Okay. We are. And also we find that this guy, this Lord Boreal, is trying to search for him.
He's searching for his father.
And his father. So because that seems like that's...
disappeared in Alaska, and Boreal believes that like his father is also hopping dimensions.
Yes. So he... so that's definitely setting us up for season 2, guys. All
right. Right. It does. It will, which is the... What's it called? Like, spoiler alert, but... He asked the alethiometer reading from the Magisterium what his destiny is. And, you know, we get the knife and the angels and the child, right?
Ooh.
Which is a connection to Will and the next book, which is called what? The Golden Knife?
Yeah.
The subtle knife. Yeah. It's literally knife. Like setting you up for season 2.
Yeah. Oh, shit. All right. Well, okay. So this Lord Asriel, played by James McAvoy.
Mm.
We get a bigger sense of what his mission is in this film and more of a relationship he has with Lyra. And let's just say that he's a dick.
Oh, he is. A Lord.
I can't stand him.
He's such a dick.
I think that's an understatement.
Yes.
He definitely contends for, at the end of this year, Father of the Year.
Yeah.
2020 is pretty early for a podcast, but so.
I mean, and to find out that that is her father, it's just like, wow, even more of a dick. Like, I just thought you were a bad uncle.
Yeah, you find out we find out that she's his father in episode 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
We find out early on.
Yeah, Mrs. Coulter rats him out.
Spills the beans.
Yes.
Yeah. And I love the way she does it, because that wasn't her intention.
It was not her intention,
She was like in fury mode. She was like rage mode. Mm-hmm. And then, pow, she spits out this secret. She's like,
yeah, she's like, fuck.
I didn't mean to
right say after that. Like hitting her child.
I know.
Well, let's actually talk a little bit about Miss Coulter, played by Ruth Wilson.
Yes.
Who is the other major character. I would major. Say it's Lyra, Miss Coulter, mm-hmm. and probably Roger. Will isn't that important this season, to be totally honest. He's just really not.
He's not.
So let's talk about what were your reactions to
total mom vibes from the beginning, especially in episode 2.
Okay.
Even though we find out earlier, not through Mrs. Coulter, but through Ma Costa, we find out that Lyra finds out that Mrs. Coulter is her mother and Lord Asriel is her father in the whole story. But before that, you get total mom vibes from Mrs. Coulter, which makes her less cold in some ways.
In some ways.
She definitely comes off as a liar. She comes off as not trusting, and she definitely comes off as like...
bipolar?
What is wrong with you? Yes, bipolar.
I would say more Jekyll and Hyde.
But so I was watching this with my girlfriend, and I was like, her demon's not speaking. Why? What is wrong with her demon? And she hits her demon.
Actually, Lyra also does point that out. It's just like,
or like, demon, why is your demon so far from you? Doesn't that hurt
there
you?
There are questions that we do have of
the demon.
Of Mrs. Coulter specifically.
Yes.
Less to do, I think, with the demon. I thought she was a witch, possibly, is what I'm thinking. That those questions do not get resolved this season.
Interesting. So nothing gets resolved. So I have a theory.
Things get resolved. Things get resolved
about her and her demon.
Oh, about her and her demon. No, nothing.
Okay, so I'm saying it now without reading the book that she's not from this universe.
Okay,
and that's either like not really her demon or was just like brought to her later in her life.
So we didn't actually get a chance. I mean, she does abuse a demon. There is a scene where we see her like abusing her demon. Like, I think this the show actually does this really nice job of really showing a good abused child, and that's the demon. Her golden monkey is very, very abused and like willing. He accepts this abuse, right? Because he's a fucking demon.
Yeah. It's
horrific. But there is an actual scene later on in the series where like she's like literally grabbing the monkey from the behind his head and just like really pulling his hair. And she does it because I think she's a masochist.
In this series, when she has her demon hurt Lyra's demon, it's a little different. It's not simply because of the handbag and you're defying me, child.
It was a little bit,
but that was her excuse.
The defiance was loud and clear on Lyra's part.
Yes. And she was like, you know, like Lyra was snooping around, but the journalist was mainly to blame who they fucking killed. But also, why is your demon a butterfly? And then because she was embarrassed, you know, like Lyra was being like, she's like, I'm going to have to put Lyra in her place. But it was also kind of just like this, I don't know, like because then she outed the father immediately after. It was like this weird, like motherly right that you felt like she was doing, like you are my child and I am going to discipline you in this way. But also the way that it happened, she was like, shh. And then like the demons like immediately sucked on her. And I thought that was interesting, too.
Sansa, you're hurting us!
If you behave in this vulgar and coarse way, then we will have a confrontation, which I will win.
This isn't who you are! Esme just upset you!
Whenever any guests arrive in the future, they are going to find you perfectly sweet, charming, innocent, delightful, just as children should be. Do you understand?
There's also something interesting in like her mannerisms, as you'll see in the show. I don't know how far you got, Nicole, but like there's these great moments of Ruth Wilson acting very animalistic, and her maneuvers, her physical acting is almost monkey-like, like the golden monkey that she has, right? So this is a great scene where like she's killing an Egyptian kid who broke into her house to steal her secrets. And like the way she just pounces on him is almost like a monkey would be like just smacking you from the behind.
Yeah, she just...
you can't see. We're like flailing our arms about like you expect like orangutans to do. And it's she, I mean.
Her screams are the same thing
her
too.
Her screams are like, also very, like you know how, go ahead.
She, there was a great scene when Lyra locks her in her room and she's trying to get out. She's pounding. Lyra, get me out. And then she just begins to scream and just like her jaw expands. Just like, it looks very.
Like a primate.
Yeah, right, yeah. Primate. And then. Lyra begins to scream like that too at the door.
That was actually a really good scene. Yeah. I thought that was very effective in terms of when we're showing mother-daughter.
It's like
how
a
they
rage.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That was just released.
Yeah. I will say this, like, the show has spectacular performances through and through, which is a credit to it, because I actually think the writing is kind of probably not as strong, though. But the performance and the atmosphere carry the show so well.
Definitely. And this show also sets up that there is a prophecy about this child. We kind of, in the Golden Compass movie, we found that out a little bit later when the witch, played by Ava Green, kind of says, you know, there's a prophecy about the child. But in this show, immediately you're told about this prophecy about her. And it just makes me think even more, what is Miss Coulter made out of? Because then there's got to be either two different universes producing a child that would probably become, like, you know, magic or something, or she's something else. But yeah, overall good performances, especially by Ruth Wilson.
Yeah, just wonderful performances all around. I'm going to give credit also to Lin-Manuel Miranda, who does actually, he plays Lee Scoresby in this version. And a different version of Lee Scoresby. Love his jacket. I thought he, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda is one of those people like Raul Julia who, not sexually appealing. Like, not sexually, like, not physically appealing, but, like, he does have a sexual magnetism to him in his, in the way he carries himself, and it carries through in this performance.
Like Fred Astaire.
Oh, I can't say. I don't know much about Fred Astaire, but I was thinking of Raul Julia, because we talked about him recently, right? Yes. Like, Raul Julia as Mauricio Adams, no. Gomez. Thank you. As Gomez Adams, right? Like, he has, again, I wouldn't call him, like, if I saw him on the street, I wouldn't be attracted to him. But when you see him performing and stuff, and he has like this magnetism, I would say it must be a Puerto Rican thing, right?
It must be.
So this is where I'm going to say major spoilers. If you guys have not finished the series, we're going to talk a lot about this ending right now. In this version, we do get to see the brutality much more of the Magisterium, right? In this version of this TV show, the Magisterium is being built up to be like the big bad. I think sometimes it gets a little lost in translation because it's a little too, like, obvious. But they are basically going to be our main bad guys. What Mrs. Coulter's role is questionable. We know that she wields some power. We know that she's able to manipulate the system in order to gain power. We do get to see this wonderful scene of her, like, really, you know, using her power to her advantage because she has captured Lord Asriel with the polar bears. And she is able to, you know,
that scene with the Cardinal.
With the Cardinal, saying, right? So the, like, Cardinal's saying, about to, like,
you're fired, or basically, I'm taking this power away from you. And she says, well, I'm going to inform you why you're not going to do that.
And then she, like, lays out all her cards, and she's,
and he's
the,
like,
Cardinal's just, like, almost jaw dropped. You know what I mean? And it's really cool to see, this is something that we didn't get to see in, obviously, in Nicole Kidman's performance, because, like, it just wasn't written. And at the same time, we also get to see, like, how she is really, really cold. But keep in mind, she's working in a world that they have established where men have all the power. So keep this in mind. Like, this is an important plot point for Mrs. Coulter, where women really, in, as far as the Magisterium is concerned, they're almost like servants. Simply similar to, like, how Catholics perceive women as, like, you know, they don't have, you know, women aren't allowed to really, you know, be church leaders.
Wow, it's so sad to know that even in parallel universes, women are the second class citizens.
And you need strong women like Mrs. Coulter to come in and kind of shake things up. I think she shakes things up awfully because, like, you know, she does what's the word? She's killing children.
Killing children.
Ends, you know?
She goes into Jordan College looking for Lyra. She's like, Lyra's not here, but let's rip this place apart just because
to I torture. Fucking yeah, can. She's yeah. petty. She's very, very petty.
Very petty.
And I think Ruth Wilson does a good job of playing this. But let's talk a little bit about the Blavla God. I forgot what it's called. It's a place where the experiments are happening. The show gives you a whole episode of seeing, like, these experiments on these children.
Oh, Jesus.
And these child actors that they got in this show are so good because they were able to just portray such fear in their eyes that it's horrific. You do. And, you know, the rumors, Lyra knows at this point what they're doing because at this point when we get to the, I'm keep messing up the name, Blav Garden, Blav. Whatever, this the horrific place. Yes, when she arrives, she's already seen the effects of it, and we know explicitly that the Magisterium, the gobblers, are splitting up the children from their demons, and they're trying to figure out how to make this permanently while retaining the humanity in the person. and we witness Billy dying, and it's a sad scene where Billy dies. Billy dies in this show
because of his demon.
Because his demon, yeah, his demon is separated, right? So they abandoned him in some farm town.
So that's interesting. He ran off. And the Golden Compass, he was able to survive without his demon.
We don't really know. They don't make it explicitly clear that he survived or died. They kind of like sidestep that altogether. Like we find him, but we don't see his demon. So we actually get to see the actual experiments going down, though, in one of the episodes, and you know, it's horrific, and yet at the same time, it's like really, really. Again, this show does a good job of building atmosphere, and one of the things that, like, you see the nurses, but the nurses we come to learn are actual humans who have survived this experiment of being cut away from your demon, and they're kind of like these like soulless creatures, right? They're just like almost zombies. And they don't make it explicitly clear until an episode or two later, but you know, that's where Lyra, you know, confronts her mom, and when she gets put into torture in that chamber to like split up her demon, right? Like that's another one where, like, similar to how the film did it, this one is like a bigger contraption and stuff. And
does the mom save her from that?
The mom saves her from it also. Yes, actually, the show, this episode really. It really draws a parallels between these people and Nazis, because they keep repeating, it's just like, we're just following orders.
This is better for
humankind.
Right. It's just like a few lives lost for all of humankind.
Which just makes a statement on anyone who, like, a bureaucratic job who is like actively ruining people's lives, you know? People like at Border Patrol who are doing terrible things to, you know, separating families at the border.
Precisely. Precisely. Mm-hmm. And again, we had children in cages once again. You know, a lot of parallels to draw from. But So this is Mrs. Coulter's action, right? The reason she's splitting up the children is because, again, she makes it explicitly clear the reason she wants dust not to settle into humans, because that's our original sin, and as a result, like, she wants a humanity without sin to free us.
Which she must know something about.
Later on, Lyra will escape. She will bring down this horrific place and escape to eventually come across her father. So she actually sees her father here at the end of this one. And Lord Asriel is, and I'm sorry guys, I'm spoiling things for you, but Lord Asriel is working to similar extents of separating a child from his demon in order to open up a portal to other worlds. And he makes it explicitly clear that the reason he's doing this is so he can go confront the authority, which is their version of God.
So he thinks that it's the lives lost will be worth it.
There's only one life lost. Okay. He's figured out how to do this experiment without killing children, but he still must sacrifice one. And it's a very gut-wrenching scene leading up to this whole scene, like where, you know, Lyra knocks on the door to, like, you know, see her father, and her father is like screaming, he's like, I didn't call for you, I didn't send for you, right? And then he looks, Roger's with her, and Roger comes, and he's just like, oh, he looks at this, the eyes he gives Roger are like almost lust filled, and it's so creepy. And we'll come to find out the next episode, the season finale, is that he ends up using Roger to try to open that portal. And Roger's death scene, without a doubt, might be the saddest death scene I've seen for a child, because James McAvoy, his Lord Asriel, couldn't bring down that separated thing like in one foul slice. Instead, is doing it slowly. It's like a slow build, and you have this poor kid, Roger, screaming, and like his demon just screaming in their cages, and just the demon just screaming, is like, Roger, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, I don't want to go, and it just comes slicing down.
Jesus, and this is a young adult fantasy novel.
This is a young adult. it's so the most gut wrenching part though comes where Lyra, because she's trying her hardest to get there to try to stop this. But she's just able to make it to the cage and not do anything. So she witnesses her friend die. Oh my God. It's so heartbreaking and tragic.
Torture porn.
And then we get to see the final confrontation between Mrs. Coulter and Lord Asriel, where they're both after the same thing without knowing it. They both are in, like, her parents are right there, right? They are so selfish, because all they're thinking about, except the mom. The mom kind of gives this moment of where, like, she decides, like, she's going to stay behind because she has to be there for Lyra. Mm. He decides to go through the portal. And Lyra hides from her mom, so her mom doesn't know she's there. There's also a big epic war scene between bears and, like, the airships. Mm-hmm. She does go, and the show ends with her going through the portal, also as Will's going through the portal.
Mm-hmm.
Will kills someone, by the way.
Okay, so
I say it like that too because that's how the show treated it. He killed someone and like there's he runs away.
Wow.
And he runs off into the portal.
Can we?
But we don't communicate. They don't see each other.
Okay, I didn't finish this. I'm learning along with our listeners who didn't know. I actually did not like the pilot episode.
I didn't think
it was very strong. Mm-hmm. I found out when I was watching the show, but it's directed by Tom Hooper, who did The King's Speech and Les Mis and Cats.
Directed by.
Yeah, he directed those films.
He directed. Yeah. But he didn't write.
And he directed the pilot. No, but still, okay. A direction is very important.
Yeah.
And I actually think that that's why I didn't like the pilot, because literally I was like, oh, I guess I'll continue watching the show. I have to. And then those episodes were immediately stronger. And it was just insane. The power of a director and who you choose. Sure. I really think so.
Okay. Second episode for sure is where it picks up.
It's way better. Yeah. So for any listener who's watching this and saw the pilot, it was like, eh. Stick with it, because it doesn't get directed by Tom Hooper, who has proven to be not a very good director, in my opinion. And stick with it, because it just gets a lot better.
It really...
In terms of pacing, everything.
It does. I think episode 2, for sure, I think might be my favorite one, because that's like the episode... That's a mother-daughter
That's
episode,
a mother
right?
one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. My next favorite one might be the episode that takes place in the actual... I call it concentration camp.
Okay. You know?
It's a messed up episode and stuff, but like, yeah. Man, is it...
It's complicated. It's dark. It's a lot darker. But I don't... How's this show caught on? What was the viewership?
That's a good question. I don't think it's...
I mean, okay, like stuff like Rotten Tomatoes gave it an 81.
Mm. That sounds appropriate for this show.
Like in Google users, 84% like this TV show.
And are people watching it?
Oh, so shit. All right. So between the first episode, what's it called? The first episode and the next episode, there was a drop in 1.5 million viewers.
I told you that pilot is not strong.
The pilot is not good. The show does get better, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show... It does get a little... I think there's a couple of episodes that I could get rid of, and I don't think the story would change that much.
Yeah.
But I think, if only for the performances, the show's really good.
It is. Well, I talked to my roommate who read all the books, and he's like, I watched the first episode, and I didn't care for it. And that was my exact opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
And, like, the power of the pilot, man. I mean, like, if that pilot does not make you want to watch the rest of the show, because that's why, you know, in comparison to the other HBO show we did 2 weeks ago, Watchmen, that pilot had me. I was like, oh my gosh, not expecting this. I want to watch more immediately.
Okay, so the season finale of His Dark Materials
mm-hmm.
had a 500,000 viewers. Is that right? It's HBO, though. I will say this. HBO doesn't really pull in high numbers because like HBO is premium.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And actually does better with streaming and stuff. So, but let me see. 0.11 was in this first episode, which was 0.424 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not that much.
Well,
so I can't say. I don't know what any of those Nielsen numbers mean. So if we ever have an expert who's listening and wants to like give me a breakdown, yeah. By all means, come. We'll have you on the show.
So even though they filmed it, I mean, I wonder if this show will continue.
It might be doing better in the BBC. Keep in mind, it's a joint production.
Yeah, it's an international
production. It's not just for Americans. HBO is like the partner producing here. But actually, the Golden Compass performed better internationally than it did here.
Yeah.
I hope at least season 2, in the event that they don't continue it because of these numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that season 2 can give me an ending unlike the Golden Compass
did. Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that this story and that these books or whatever, not knowing the books, but from the story from the Golden Compass to this, do you think we needed this?
Yes. I actually do think it was needed. And here's why. 12 years ago, because that's when the last one came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
About 12 years ago, just speaking ill about organized religion apparently was a sin because you had an uprising. Not one peep was made about this show, which either shows that like as a society we're evolving past it, or mm-hmm. we have more shit to worry about than just like a show that criticizes religion.
Yes.
I think the message here seems a little more articulated,
mm-hmm.
which was not the case in The Golden Compass because they washed it down. I think it's needed. I think the problem with this show might be is like, who is this show for?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, where this show suffers. It's like, it's on HBO, so you assume it's going to have like lots of nudity, homosexuality. I thought Lord Boreal might be gay. they were hinting at it, and I kind of wish they would just cross that threshold.
Yeah, yeah. And it's HBO. Like, you should have done that in episode one.
They should have been, like, penetration somewhere.
Yeah, seriously.
There was none.
Explicit penetration. I'm a little torn on my answer. I think it's a better show. I think it probably, what it's, it seems like it has the novels more padded down. It's darker, and I do like the critique at organized religion, and just like, because we also, we need that. We can't just like accept everything and swallow it. That's spoon fed to us and swallow it. So, but at the, then at the same time, yeah, who is this for? And what is the intention too? Because also, what is this focusing on? Is this focusing on a family dynamic? Is this focusing on more of like the conflict between authority and like people who either abide or who don't? And I don't know, like 100%, because I haven't finished it yet, I don't know what I haven't felt what I'm supposed to be getting out of it yet. Mm-hmm. Other than just like a good show with a great cliffhanger that makes you want to come back every week.
And the show does that, right? Yeah. HBO is good at that, like giving you a good
cliffhanger that keep.
This, but you're right, the first episode, because I saw the first episode actually the week it came out, and I after that I was just like, I guess I'll watch it.
You almost are like hesitant. But I also, I guess, you know, and with an unfair, but I'll have to, comparison to the other HBO show that came out with Watchmen, I was like, I'm getting a lot that I am relating to. I'm seeing a mirror reflection of like things that I just didn't expect in this. And it's like, I gravitate towards that too. I'm like, oh, commentary. Yes. You know, give me more. Like, I'm not really getting that from his Dark Materials.
So I'm glad you brought up Watchmen, because I did want to ask this to you, and I wish we would have done it earlier so the listeners could probably be listening. Hopefully they're listening still. But my question for you is, because the last three properties, including this one, mm-hmm. have been basically adaptations.
Yes.
And we've seen the first one that kind of decided to create something new from its source material,
yeah.
but still be related to the source material. We saw the second one, which is Little Women.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one was Watchmen. The second one was Little Women, in which it takes the source material, the most recent one, takes the source material and decides to like mix things up as a way to keep it fresh.
Yes.
And that was its nonlinear storytelling. This one seems like a very page-by-page adaptation of the source material.
Without having read it.
Without having read it. Right. To my understanding, this is a much more faithful adaptation to, than the Golden Compass itself, which mm-hmm. is a beat-by-beat adaptation, but it doesn't necessarily carry the same messaging and the same like emotional beats, where this show, I think, hits those notes more so.
Yeah.
So, what do you think is going on in terms of Hollywood and adaptations and stuff right now?
I think Watchmen and Little Women are at the forefront of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think His Dark Materials is kind of doing the classical approach, where they're now doing the a new approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, I think that Little Women had the success of, at the core of it, it's saying something about, that's really important to us right now, roles of women in society, depictions of women in society. Watchmen too is like, this is a perfect way for us to kind of address some things. I don't necessarily know. I think His Dark Materials is something that probably just needs to be addressed at all times,
okay.
instead of right now. So right now, it's not like any core issue that's happening. But I think that maybe in 10 years, this can relate a little bit more to people. Maybe in 20, and maybe at any time it can
interesting
relate.
Interesting. So I actually think it might be right now a good time for it, only because we've seen the rise of the religious right so much. I mean, that's why I think the success of Handmaid's Tale comes from, right? It's critique
yes.
of a theocracy, and that's basically what the world we see here in
true
in this one. I think the problem it comes into is the fact that it's so fantastical.
That is exactly what I was gonna say. The Handmaid's Tale feels like it could happen tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Horrifyingly.
Yeah.
There's no way. I mean, the addition of demon, as nice as it is and as much as I want my own demon, makes it less relatable.
Yeah I agree with you.
The question of, you know, calling into question of authorities is just always an important thing, period. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, you should always question things.
Yeah.
I'm a proponent of people who are into conspiracy theories or just kind of like look past things, you know, like you kind of have to do that though. You cannot trust every information that is just handed to you.
There's a level.
There's a level too, but there's something to say. I mean, if someone begins to talk of, hey, yeah, in the other town, I've been smelling something kind of really weird. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe they're burning people.
Okay,
you know, that's a possibility. What
it
do you
is
think?
A possibility.
You
know? Yeah.
Hey, you just be so conspiracy guy.
Yeah.
Do not try to make me the bad guy for not falling for conspiracy. I look at news objectively. I try to at least.
Yeah, but who feeds you the news?
Oh, you got to look at that. Different sources from your
yeah,
news, right?
Of course.
So that's why I'm constantly like, I don't just read CNN. I'm also reading BBC. I try to read Al Jazeera, but I feel like their writing could be a little.
What
dense.
About NPR?
NPR is also a good source of news. I listen to most of their podcasts, so then I do like read their news. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I feel like the NPR is obviously much more radio focused, so I think that's their strongest suit. But in terms of reading, it tends to be for you CNN and BBC, Al Jazeera occasionally, but they're very dense in their reading. Yeah, I think is my complaint. So I
in general, that is what I'm saying. Whether it's church, whether it's state, whether it's government,
in this case, whether it's
your parents.
Or your parents, yeah, because like as we learned, like poor
they could be shitheads.
Poor Lyra, she has two shitty parents.
The only person you can trust on is yourself,
or your friend who's going to get murdered,
or a golden compass who tells you the truth.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about the fucking golden compass at all in this one. The alethiometer,
which is
a golden compass. It tells the truth.
Tell us the truth. Yeah. Do people like listening to our podcast? Are people going to listen to the whole episode?
It's a skull and crossbone. What does that mean?
Yeah. All three times too.
Lightning round. Okay, so Lyra.
Oh, the new girl.
She's a better actress. Again, it's a TV show, better character building. I really did like Dakota Blue Richards, though. I don't know. I really want to make it a tie.
Okay, so if I had to make a comparison, the scene that would break it for me for the new girl, what's her name?
Daphne Keene.
Daphne Keene. Sorry. But the reason I like Daphne Keene was in the performance where she's lying to the polar bear king, where Dakota played it too cool. Daphne had this range where she's playing it cool and terrified. And it's spectacular performance. Like she's lying through her teeth and then she's like fucking terrified for her life at the same time. It's like a great performance on her. And I
also like the scene where she's just like yelling at Ma Costa, like, why is this happening to me? Like, cannot process all the shit that's happening to her. I'm like, yeah, that's a real moment right there.
Daphne Keene is she has a really bright future ahead if she keeps picking her roles right.
Lord Asriel.
Okay, I'm going to go with Daniel Craig only because he wasn't a dickhead, but he didn't get developed at all. So we don't know how they were going to go. Yeah. We don't know how he was going to go in the new one.
Yeah. James
McAvoy.
Definitely nicer. James McAvoy is an asshole in this, but that's, that's who the character is.
The character that he played was an asshole. He played great as this character.
Yes, the character is
a cold scientist.
Yes, purpose. Because, he had that slit of the moment when he's talking to her and he's almost connecting with you're my daughter. You're my daughter. And then he said, enough with these sentimentals.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to cry. She started crying and he's just like, there's no place for crying. Get away.
Yeah, there's no crying in
the North Pole.
In the North Pole.
Under the Northern Lights.
Crying? And should we just stick it to those three?
Did we say Mrs. Coulter?
I was going to leave her last, but should we do Lee Scoresby. Lee Scoresby?
Okay, yeah, Lee Scoresby. So I actually, I'm going to go with Sam Elliott.
Sam
Lee
Scoresby. Elliott all the way.
I really do. I'm not by any means putting down Lin-Manuel Miranda, but it just felt like Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yeah.
It just felt like Lin-Manuel Miranda in this fantastical world.
And all those...
he even breaks out into song occasionally.
Really?
Not a musical moment. It's he's just singing as he's doing things. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what, the audience loves about him. So.
Yes. Yeah, so they gave us that. But Sam Elliott felt like an actual realized character of some sorts.
Yes, I would agree with him. And Philip Pullman, too, said that that's the best casted one for him.
What about Yorick?
I'm not there yet.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
That's why I was like, I gotta just stick it to the top.
Okay.
So we're gonna have to end it with Mrs. Coulter.
Mrs. Coulter. Roger? You've seen Roger.
Oh, okay. Roger.
Roger. Oh. Okay. I was asking you. Roger, I would pick actually the new Roger.
The new Roger?
He's so much cuter too.
Ooh. I mean, they both have this, buggy eyes and big teeth.
They do.
Which is definitely,
I guess that's how he's described in the book.
That must be how he's described in the book. I don't know. They're kind of interchangeable for me right now in my head. I can't even really tell them apart.
Go. As you see a couple of episodes, I'm sure really that will flesh change. Up that character.
It's true.
Yeah. He's a better flesh out character in the TV show. Of course he is. So I'll go with him.
I feel like he gets about the same amount of screen time, though, between obviously he gets more in the TV show. But in terms of his actual moments, about the same as the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just just watching him die at the end. I was just if only for that. It's just my God.
Yeah.
They killed this poor child. It's in such cold blood.
Yeah, this is something to look forward to.
Yeah.
My girlfriend children keep watching, so.
Oh, she's going to cry.
She will cry.
Cry at the death of children? Okay.
You don't?
Just keep keep on building that persona, Papa.
All right, so Mrs. Coulter.
Rachel Wilson.
Ruth Wilson.
Oh, shit. Ruth Wilson.
Of course.
Ruth Wilson.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, she's more layered, you know? Like, the mom aspect comes through more. She has more screen time, you know? Like, in the movie, it's unfair where, like, the thing attacks her and then that's it. And then you see her back and it's like, I know where they're going. Blah, blah, blah. And well, then that's okay. It.
So take away like, the fact that, like, Ruth, if you just have to like, compare it to scenes from the TV show to just the movie, right? Because you could do that, right? We can just compare scenes from the show to the movie, like, equivalent.
The fact that I got mom vibes from Ruth more without knowing it, like, even if I were just to compare it and stuff from, like, scene to scene back and forth, you would feel like there's something boiling underneath with Ruth Wilson, where you kind of don't feel, you feel kind of almost like a vapid, cold, vicious energy with Nicole Kidman.
Which is, I feel like, Nicole Kidman. She's going to sue me. She's going to hunt me down.
Yeah, yeah. We were waiting to get sued.
Give me that cold shoulder.
Might as well
shoulder.
Be my Nicole Kidman. So I would definitely say Ruth Wilson. I think she's an underrated actress. I don't know why she's not more famous.
Yeah. No, a wonderful show. You should keep at it, Nicole. As it continues, you will enjoy it more and more.
I definitely will.
Did anybody take the BuzzFeed test on What's Your Demon?
Oh, no.
Let's put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes for sure.
Definitely.
I bet you mine is going to be like a pig.
FYI. Yeah. Mine's a wolf.
Oh,
really? That's a cool one to have.
Shit. Let's see. Let's take it right now.
This is breaking news.
So we just took the test. Nicole,
we just took the test.
What's your demon?
I did not get an eagle. I got a ferret.
Oh, a ferret. That's cute. I got a weird one. I have a koala.
I can totally see it.
I don't know.
Babe, you're my koala.
Aww, you see? You have got a bear.
All right, so here we go. Here we go. You have super chill vibes. Oh, that's true. Koala bear.
Yeah.
No.
You got a bear.
I never specified. What kind of bear did I? All right, so I have super chill vibes and I rarely let anything faze me, which is true. But people shouldn't mistake you for complacent. You know how to rumble and you don't take anyone's shit. Sleeping, eating, and spending time alone makes me happiest. Actually, to be honest, it kind of figured me out.
Aww.
That's funny.
I am smart, quick-witted, and able to get into and out of most things as I please without ever breaking a sweat, whether it's a family engagement or a dream job. Often, my life appears as if I've had endless amounts of luck to others, but the truth is that I'm very good at making calculated decisions and careful risks. Everything that I have is the work of... is the result of my hard work and smarts.
And that's the ferret?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting thing for the ferret.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look at that.
Look at that, yeah.
I'm a ferret and you're a koala.
A koala. Does that mean this is hanging out on me?
And like, I'm a wolf.
Yeah, hey, you can eat us both.
Sure.
That's so funny. All right. Well, guys, let us know what your spirit animal demon is.
What your demon is.
Let us know in your comments. We'll make sure we post it on social media.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll post it on social media too, like a picture of us and our demon, or we'll superimpose our demon.
yeah, let's take those pictures.
Yeah, that'd be great. But yeah, let us know in our comments on our social media. Where can people find us, Nicole?
You can find us on Instagram at Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. You can email us, remakesrebootsandrevivals@gmail.com. And we have a Facebook. Look us up on Facebook, Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
Although, full disclosure, anything that you see on Facebook and Instagram are the same thing usually.
Pretty much.
You never know.
Sometimes.
We'll still respond to both.
Yes.
But yes. But guys, we hope you had fun traveling the world of His Dark Materials.
Yes, parallel universes.
Yes, yes. Are you going to read the book now, Nicole?
No.
No?
Yeah, I just don't have the time with all the shit we have to watch for this.
Well, I guess that's it.
That is it. We will see you guys next week. And until next time,
stay unoriginal.